Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. No Stephen this week, so it's myself, Gareth Barker, doing the delightful hosting duties after a thrilling encounter at the Stadium of Light on Saturday afternoon. And I'm delighted to say that I've got two people with me to help make something of what everybody witnessed. And those two unfortunate souls come in the form of Wise Men Say regulars, Eleanor McCabe.
Hello, Gareth. There's not much to contribute, but we'll try. Even with like 24 hours to reflect, I don't 24 48 hours. 48. God, I don't know. I don't know what like.
Well,
you
we'll
can
find
say,
out.
But we'll try and natter on for an hour.
I mean, well, 15 minutes. And we're also joined by Michael Love. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening, Gareth. It's probably a good job me and Eleanor didn't do a reaction pod on Saturday, because it'd be even less to talk about A during the reaction pod on Saturday, and then B tonight would just be an absolute non-event. So,
I don't know. Well, really. I think it's interesting because you're kind of like in a situation where like obviously we do a podcast like twice a week, three times we do the reaction, and it just felt like there's just no appetite to do a reaction because I mean, what could you actually say about what that was on Saturday? I mean,
I think that like you need to have a reaction to a match, but I think a lot of people, and I know I certainly was when I walked out of the stadium, it was just apathy. Like, I think the only kind of moment of, oh, that was all right, is like, oh, we've broken the losing streak, but we've broken it with a 0-0 draw. It's like the most boring way you could break a streak. And yeah, it was just, it was a bit of a, is the word doldrum? Like, it was a bit of just a on and on and on. One of those where you keep looking the clock and you're like, oh, are we only 18 minutes in? All right, yeah. Let's just keep watching, hoping it goes quicker.
A doldrum, did you just say there?
A doldrum, is that the right word?
No, I don't think the do you know what the doldrums are?
No.
Do you know what the doldrums are, Mick?
I've definitely used the wrong word here.
It's a phrase. You can be in the doldrums, but like a doldrum within itself, I don't believe is a thing, but it's just one of them.
Yeah.
Well, it is actually a body of stuff. Are you not aware of this?
Doldrums, a state or period of stagnation or depression, which really, if I'm going to describe the match,
it's a body of water that's very long and dangerous to traverse. I think it's off the southern coast of Africa. I could be wrong off the top of my head.
It's in the Atlantic Ocean. I can give you that.
So the doldrums is basically where people like go and get and die, probably. So there you go. Yes, we are. It was very much a doldrum-based activity. I mean, that was more interesting than the game. Let's be honest. You've learned what the doldrums were if you didn't know what the doldrums were.
Yeah, a doldrum is also a dull and sluggish person. Is another definition for it. So you can call someone a doldrum.
Leo Gelder.
Yes, well, a lot of them, really.
Left doldrum.
Potentially, Hamia.
I mean, he epitomises doldrum, really.
Yeah, it just, there's not a lot that you can be, like, positive about. Like, I mean, I think that, okay, if we're going to get, let's get the positives out of the way, because we don't like it on this podcast. But, like, Aushish, I think, had a decent game. I think that kind of we saw something from him. Patterson made a couple of good saves, but again, I think we still do see weak parts of his game. I think that he's parrying the ball away too quickly. I don't think he catches it enough. And it was sunny. And those are my positive points of the game on Saturday.
Daniel was decent.
Again,
kind of wasted in that deeper midfield position. Do you think, Michael, when he's like, especially when we're lacking creativity, he's somebody who has the ability to pick a forward pass. And it just seemed he was a little bit wasted in that kind of more deep deeper role of midfield.
Yeah, completely. But this is what we've been saying for a while now. He's having to perform a job which actually nullifies quite a few of the strengths rather than trying to make the most of them. And it's just really irritating because he looks very good playing from the deep role. But I'm not saying necessarily him especially, but we were linked with Jan and Villa in January. Now, if you had a player of that ilk, that quality, that pedigree, who was sitting in a more deep lion role, that would really free up the more expansive passes forward, like you say. But it's one of them things. I mean, with having like both Hamir and Burstow, I think the main disadvantage they both have over Rusin is that they don't make the correct runs in behind. Because Rusin, I think it would be fair to say, even though I don't buy into this narrative of like, oh, well, we don't play to the strengths of a centre forward. But Rusin, to be fair, I think is the one player you could say justified in that he gets on the shoulder, he looks again behind, he wants the ball played through to him. But Hamir and Burstow, the play just seems to just happen in front of them, and they don't do enough to get involved themselves. And Hamir at the weekend, he just looked absolutely like a million miles away than ever getting up to the required standard. And he's another player who we've signed on a very long contract. And it just really typifies a lot of what a recruitment's been since January 2023 in terms of it's just what we've signed is just not what we need to improve the team immediately. But then you look at them and you think, right, how are they ever going to get up to the standard and get up to the level? So I just think it just, as I say, there's a lot of things that just aren't right at the club at the minute.
I'm looking at Jan and Villa, actually. I think he's made one appearance so far for West Brom. He was on the bench for two games, and then he played against Bristol City for 9 minutes, I think, as a substitute. So, you know, I was actually curious, thinking like, has he actually done anything yet? But he hasn't. But he'd probably get more minutes at Sunderland, given we have no midfielders. Although Evans did come back to, I haven't seen what happened in that under-23s, under-21s. Did he really?
Yeah, he scored, and then we lost 3-2.
Did we? Who were playing?
Yeah, the Mags.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Yeah. Or a load of like the first team players were down there as well, like Clark, Neil, 09. They didn't play, but they were watching.
Emily played, didn't he?
Yeah, oh God. I've just seen someone put in the group chat, this is probably a lot to do with the fact that Corey Evans played, but the average age of the starting 11 for the under-21s today was higher than the average age of our starting 11 on Saturday for the first time, which just tells you everything you need to know.
It's infuriating to hear that, because I know that Evans isn't ready to come back and just come straight into the starting 11. I get that. But ultimately, if there had been any sort of forward planning and looking ahead, we wouldn't be in a situation where we're having to promote these players from the under-21s to try and get into our team quicker, where we're playing these kids who ultimately, yes, fair enough, if we are going to buy a squad where we want to develop them and where we want to bring them on, that is fine. But you cannot do that if you do not also support it with experience. And that is what we do not have. Evans has been injured. I mean, they said what, like after 421 days, he's finally back on the pitch. I think that's the like tweet the club put out. How many transfer windows have we had since he's been injured? Well, we haven't brought in any sort of experience to replace him. You've got players like Dan Neil, who, bless him, is doing an absolutely cracking job. I cannot slate him at all. But ultimately, he's our experience on the pitch when he's still relatively a young lad who does have a lot of experience at this level, but because he's been pushed into it through injuries, and he's the one who we're having to look for. We've got rid of players like Pritchard. We've got like Dak as a replacement, but he's appeared on Loose Women more times than he has for Sunderland this year. Like, really, I don't know what more we can say other than we need experience, and we need experience that's going to make a difference. We're not saying buy an old man for the sake of buying an old man. Just buy someone who these young players can turn around and actually gain something off, because they look lost out there. That is what we saw on Saturday. They are lost, and they need a kind of more of that captain role, more of that experience role on the pitch that they just don't have. That's my rant done for tonight.
No, I mean, it doesn't even have to be an age thing, like you say. I think, like you say, Ballard's a good example. Yeah, he's young, but he's got, you know, games in the bank at the level. And kind of that's where I would say we're lacking generally. It's interesting, you know, Bellingham's played a lot of games. There's a lot of discussion around Bellingham, but think like he's getting some harsh criticism. It seems he's kind of one to have a bit of a go at from some quarters. But again, he's like a kid who's being asked to play every game. First full season in professional football, essentially.
I think, to be fair to him, he was quite good in that deeper role on Saturday. Like, I thought that it gave him a bit more space to work on that kind of collecting the ball and keeping the ball element of his game. And I thought that I quite liked him playing that deeper role. And then obviously they pushed him up and I thought he had a decent game. And I have been a bit critical of him recently. I've thought that he needed a rest. I thought that there were various kind of errors that he'd made. But I do think kind of pushing him deeper on Saturday did work well for him. I don't know whether like anyone else thought that, but I definitely thought it was a good thing to see from him.
No, I completely agree with what you both said, and particularly with the point about the unfair standard I think he's been held to. I mean, when you consider his age, I think if he was a lad who came through our academy and was having a breakout season like this, people would be quite rightly absolutely raving about him. But again, it's because we have like such a lack of squad depth that we've had to just play him persistently across the season. And I'll tell you what I think sums it up best about the poor like kind of squad planning within the recruitment team. So you could argue that in our like kind of left back position that we have like good depth. So you would say you've got Sirk and you've got Elise, you've got Huggins. But the problem is, you know that they are very unlikely to play 40 games a season, even 35 games a season. So the issue you have is at some point they're all going to be injured and you can't just have an injured lad all come into the team and then they'll be replaced by someone else who's fit because they can break down at the same time, as we've seen. So what you need to do in that scenario is you need to bring in cover who you can rely on playing like a certain number of games a season. So like it's not necessarily the fault of the club that these players are getting injured, but it's the fact that we seem to be like act surprised when these players get injured. Same with Corey Evans. He comes to the club with a really, really bad injury record and we kind of expect him to be the linchpin of the midfield. And then we kind of act surprised and say it's unlucky when he does break down. And I just think it's poor planning. It's a bit like if the weather forecast was for rain every day of this week and you went to work without a coat on in the morning, you couldn't complain that you've like gotten to work soaking. And that's just kind of the way our policy's been the last 8 months.
It's interesting, isn't it, the injuries and the injury-prone argument. And people say, well, so-and-so's been unlucky. Look, biomechanically, some players get injured more often than others. It's like just a fact, for whatever reason that may be. And we've got a lot of players who get injured. As we like, you've listed three there, four even. And it's a common thread with those individuals that they do get regularly injured. You might, if you were being harsh, you could potentially put Ballard into a category of somebody who seems to pick up, injuries consistently. Yeah. Although thankfully obviously had that broken toe, didn't he, when he first joined. I mean, it's funny, isn't it, because people are like, oh, well, it's great by the club to sell Ross Stewart, injury prone, but like he played like 50 games like in the season where we got promoted. So when we didn't have another striker, basically, aside from Broadhead. I know a lot of people are kind of pointing their injuries at the moment and saying, you know, I've heard, oh, you know, need a bit of luck, a bit of the rubs are green or whatever. Well, you know, you make your own luck. If you're talking about a data-based recruitment approach, and one of the variables isn't availability, I'm not sure then what the point is, because you need the players you brought in available to play. And it seems we do stack up a lot of players who do get injured. But there's another part of that is, in terms of the depth of the squad, the players who we do have available have been brought in as first-team-ready footballers. It's not like we're playing under 21s or players from the academy in the team, because we have to. We're playing players who we have brought in, like Mundell, Hamia, Burstow, Barr, Aushish. You know, they're not like players that we've developed ourselves. These are players we've gone out and signed because we believed that they were ready to come into the side. So, I mean, that front three at the weekend was, I mean, it's going to sound harsh, but it was absolutely desperate to watch. Really disappointing and embarrassing, actually. Thought, you know, there was, I think, Barr with people around him. I mean, you can give your opinion after I'm finished. Barr with people around him, I think, is okay. I think he needs some people to drag him along a bit, and he has got something about him at times.
Yeah.
18 months, I don't know. And is him going to be good in 18 years? I don't know. I mean, that might sound incredibly harsh, but he must be. I think him and Burstow are two of the worst centre forwards I've ever seen play for Sunderland. And they're both playing for us at the same time. Now, I mean, somebody might go, you're being a horrible negative, they're only kids, blah, 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 blah. Tony Mowbray destroys Hamia's confidence by saying that he needs to run around a bit more. I don't know.
He does need to run around a bit more. Like, he didn't run at all on Saturday. I think, like, in terms of Barr, I think I did feel for him a bit on Saturday. I think he was playing on the wrong side. I think we should have been playing him on the right. I think that's a really kind of obvious thing that the majority of people will be saying. I don't understand why he was on that side. I mean, A, he plays better on the right. We've seen this time and time again. And B, Mundell, technical ability, I'm not sure yet. I haven't seen enough of him to say, but he's got pace. And end of the day, if you'd put him, like, if you'd switch them and put Barr on the other side and Mundell on the left, and you'd put him up against Jimmy Dunn, Jimmy Dunn's going to have to foul him every time because he's just going to run past him. And that was something that didn't make sense to me. And as well as that, I felt like Barr was having to run over to kind of provide cover and support for Hamia, because Hamia was just not getting into the positions he needed to get into. So Barr was having to cover kind of both of those positions. And I think he suffered as a result of it on Saturday, and I did feel for him. But I can't with Hamia, and I don't want to dig him out because I know he's a young lad and all that. Like you said, I don't want to be negative, but Barr, when he did that thing for a while where he'd like jump in front of the keeper as the keeper like kicked the ball, I've not seen anything that makes me think he's going to be successful at this club. Like I can't think of a thing, and maybe I'm missing something. Maybe he had a moment at some point, but I can't see anything where I think he's going to be successful here. And I also can't see anything that suggests why he's being picked week on week. I get the argument about him being our player, and that's why we're playing him over Burstow. But like, and I don't want to be one of those people who's like, well, surely there's someone in the under-21s, but surely there's someone in the under-21s who'll like run at the centre-halves and who'll like give them a bit more to do than Hamia does. Like, I know that it's a like pub talk thing to say, like, oh, we'll just stick the young ones up. But like,
well, the kids are in. The kids are literally in. You can't get any more kids in than we are ever. I mean, we always should like laugh about, you know, whenever it's going wrong, kids in 4-4-2. That was the solution. And we have gone full kids in at the point where the kids are actually older than the first team, so we can't really, I mean, unless we're going to like put an embryo up front, you know, raid the hospital for some
I don't know where you're going
sort of defrost something and start, stick that up front. But yeah, I mean, you can't get much more kids in than we currently are. I think it's not about kid. It's not about, again, it's not about the age. It's about ability, isn't it? And I think, I don't know what you think of Hamia and Burstow, Mickey, but
It's just one of them things, isn't it? I think it's fair to say Burstall probably looks more like as if he's actually played football before than him here. But
it's the bar.
But yeah, but that's it. It's like, this is the thing, because like, I agree with Eleanor. I would prefer to play a Burstall, but I'm hesitant to like really make a strong case for Burstall, because there's so many games he's played. He hasn't been like outright dreadful, but he's just simply not been involved in the game. And I think what just sums it up at the weekend, there was actually a bit in the first half when Hamia won the ball back really high up the pitch. And if that had been Rousen that would have won it, he might not have scored, but his head would have been down. He would have gone, he'd have had the opportunity, he got a shot off. Hamia held the ball, tried to cut the step over as the defenders got back and there was no danger. I've never seen a player to play for Sunderland at this standard who has such little football instinct. Even when I watch him play for the under-23s, under-21s, whatever it is, he looks behind the pace of that game at that level. And the coach and staff have to talk him through every second of every game, but on him, like, Hamia, you should be doing this. Hamia, you need to drop in there. And I just think to myself, I've seen lads who have played for Sunderland Reserves who have gone on to play for, like, Spennymoor Town, who I'm not saying that they'll have, like, some attributes as good as Hamia, but they will have more of, like, an instinct and just kind of know-how of what to do and what positions to take up. And it's quite a depressing, like, state of affairs, really, to be honest. But it's one of them. It's like, you take a mirror, oh, great, we'll play Burstall again. It's at the point, I think we're back to where we were a few months ago, where you're saying that Joe Bellingham's the best striker at the club.
I mean, he is. I mean, I would have played Bellingham up front at the weekend based on what we've got available to us. Before that, we should be playing Russen most weeks, if not every week, because he's our player and he looks like the most lively. I mean, I was sitting pretty much in line with that incident where he's won the ball back. He was a yard ahead of the defenders. And you kind of think, you've nicked the ball back. There's nobody in front of you. So drive into the space and then put your body across. So they have to foul you, basically. And then you create a scenario in which you've nicked the ball back. You've got in front of them. You run away from the defenders, meaning they have to challenge you. Potentially you create a scenario in which they might get a player sent off if you don't get a shot away. But he just kind of like got the ball and just stopped and then let the two defenders get back and then he tried to beat them again. It's like, it is just bizarre. It's like watching somebody, like you say, make you play football who, like, for a striker to win the ball in that scenario and not drive towards goal, it's just a bizarre. It's very difficult to explain.
It's instinct, isn't it? Like, that's like.
Well, that's like, I mean, but that's like entry level instinct.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about a striker's instinct, like somebody being. I mean, I keep on
running
about,
towards
like,
goal. Yeah.
What we need to do is play to Hamia's strengths. What is that then? Square the ball to him a yard out in an open goal, and he might get 4 or 5 goals a season. I don't really know what. He hasn't earned that footballer has not earned the right for a team to play to his strengths, whatever they may be.
Yeah.
You've got to earn a right. You've got to do what you've got to do the things you don't want to do to earn the opportunity. You get the opportunities that, you know, to get the goal scoring opportunities, to get those situations and scenarios. He doesn't do any of the stuff that he should be doing, or doesn't do any of the dirty work. He doesn't run the channels. He likes to drop deep and pick the ball up at times, but it's easy. If you're a defender, you're going to let him go.
Yeah, because you're going to think, where's he going?
That's it. Well, yeah, well, you're in front of
him. What's he going to do with that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you've dropped off 20 yards and picked the ball up unmarked and in the centre of the pitch. Well, great. If you're a centre-half, you're going, well, he's only forward on the pitch that I'm defending, I'm marking, and he's not interested in getting up against me, so... You drop deep and pop it about. It's not like it's not like he's dictating play once he drops deep. He's just handing off to somebody else. So great.
It's like we saw an example of it on Saturday when that Sinclair Armstrong came on. Like, every single time you could see, as soon as he got on, you knew he was going to be quick. And you could see that every single time they were going to get the ball to him and he was just going to try and outrun Dan Ballard, he was going to try and get them into that kind of dangerous area. And what, within 10, 15 minutes of him being on, he'd had 2 shots away that, like, yeah. Patson had to make a save on. Compare that to us. And correct me if I'm wrong, I do not think we had a shot on target on Saturday.
We didn't.
That is ridiculous for a team where, like, if you think, and I don't want to think about where we were this time last year, but if you think about kind of where we've come from and the goal scoring opportunities we were creating, granted with players who've now left or loan spells have ended, but when you think about kind of the goals we've seen and the work up to goals we've seen, that goal at Reading, that was just like one of the most beautiful things I think I've ever experienced. For us to go from doing that to now, we literally cannot even put the ball towards their keeper. He must have like gone for a run afterwards. He must have been absolutely like full of energy because we did not test him at all.
He's probably about, he's probably like 48 or something now, and he's
I was probably relieved actually.
Yeah. I don't know how old he is.
To go through 90 minutes of football and not have a shot on target, man, like how do you
it happens, but it's the consistent lack of threat that we have. I mean, Sinclair Armstrong, and if you want to talk about the wider thing, so if you look at his record on paper, it's pretty rubbish. I think he scored once in about 30 appearances. But if you're talking about the model, right, and you're looking at what can you work with when you bring in a player in? He's 20-year-old. He's 6'5". He's physical. He's quick. He got onside twice. Two excellent runs. Probably his finishing was a bit weak, but the third one he got it, the third one where he squared it, where they should have scored and Patterson's made a really good save. That's all him creating that. You know, he's had more shots on target than Hamir in an entire season in like 15 minutes. Do you know what I mean? And he's created an opportunity because, and you just think, you look at that and think, well, if you're backing yourself as a football club to take a player and develop them of the right age, someone like that for me is the perfect blueprint because you go, well, he's got a bit of a championship experience. He's a good age. Bags of potential. Loads to work with. You take him and you make him better. He could play every week for us now. He might not be successful in terms of goal return, but he could play for us every week without doubt. If you compare him to, say, the options that we've got.
Because he gave Ballard something to do.
Oh, I did. I mean, I said to my dad as soon as he came, I was like, this lad will cause us no end of problems. He's got everything defenders doesn't like. Physicality, pace.
Mm-hmm.
And he made, like I said, he made two great runs to get in behind twice in the half an hour he was on the pitch, you know.
And that's the frustrating thing as well. How many times are we in a position where like their centre halves, their defenders are stood there with probably about 5 minutes to work out a plan to try and stop us in our attack? Like since, and I know that Clark is like that bit of gold dust and he is something we have to kind of hold on to for as long as possible. But since Clark's got injured, it's rare that we see that kind of pace where the defenders are taken one way and we're going round. It's rare that those plans kind of come into fruition. Like the goals have felt more accidental. We've caught a bad team off guard. We've kind of accidentally bumbled it in. And like, it's because it's not all because, but I do think a big part of that is we don't have a striker. And we really saw this on we don't have a striker. I'm refusing to call him here a striker now, but we don't have a striker who is keeping the defense busy, who is making them think, who is making them run. They are having time and time to plan out their next moves and work out where we're going to go. And it means that every single time we look like we're just a step behind the other team. And I think we were lucky on Saturday that they, because I don't think they were particularly good.
They weren't.
Like I wasn't enamoured by anything I saw.
But they still had the best chances in the game.
Yeah, and I think a better team turns us over.
Oh, like, I mean, we've lost six on the bounce and
exactly.
We drew 0-0 against a team who were about in relegation and they should have won the game. If it wasn't for Patterson making a number of saves, especially that one from the cutback. I mean, that one goes in. We're having a very different conversation today, I think, in terms of
relegation.
I mean, the conversation. Well, not just that, but we're looking at the position of the interim coach. I think. I mean, Pete might have on the conversation.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Anyway, but really, with the international break come up, you've lost 7 on the bounce. I mean, we've seen this ownership react to scenarios based on a variety of factors, in the negative factors in the past, where something has got to the position where I think this is untenable here. Based on this and based on that, we have to make a change.
But in the space for like, and I'm not giving up on the seat. Well, I've probably given up on like playoffs now. Like I don't think we're going to get automatically promoted at this point. And I'm not giving up on the season, but in the space of the time we've got left, if we brought someone in, it's kind of a last-ditch save attempt, isn't it?
But it depends who you bring in, isn't it? If you bring Lano, the lads on Thursday were saying, if you bring your plans forward for the summer to now and give them the 8 games to work with the group that they've got, I think that's the thing. People got to remember, we weren't willing to spend, and I'm not saying we should or shouldn't have, by the way. We weren't willing to spend money on Alice Sims in the summer. If we'd had 20 million, would we have spent the money on Alice Sims in the summer? Probably not. The group that we've got at the moment is going to be the core group next year. It is.
Yeah, you're right. I'm just putting my head in my hands because
they're not going to. How many changes would they have to make to ensure that that wasn't the case? We're going to lose our best player. They've got to reinvest that. How many players of the appropriate level are you going to be able to get with that level of funding, the 18, 20 million quid? I mean, people like see people on social media like laughing at Ellis Sims. He scored 10 and 8.
Well, we had this conversation last time. I think I was on the Monday pod, like about Kiefer Moore.
Well, I mean, he's got now 7.
Well, this is the thing. We said like they were talking about, well, it wasn't worth it for the, like we looked at the return and in terms of how much money we'd have to spend to keep us up, and with how much Ellis Sims has scored. Kiefer Moore scored. To be honest with you, even like Broadhead at this point, are you seriously telling me that those goals aren't worth it when we're in the absolute drought that we're in and we're in the doldrums and bringing it back around? Is that money still not worth it? And they can do as many like calculations as they want, but end of the day, goals are what are going to get you promoted. You need someone who's going to come in and score goals. Like, that is the basics of football. And I know I'm bringing it very much down to kind of base level here, but we do not have a goal outlet. And that is because we have not invested wisely in that area. We have not invested really at all in that area. We've bought in some unproven strikers who aren't doing anything at the moment. And it's just so depressing to see. And it makes you question if this is going to be the core, if we're going to keep like Hamir in that number 9 shirt. And I know it doesn't mean as much anymore, but if he's going to be in the number 9 shirt, like what's our long-term plan? What is the goal here? Is the goal actually to get promoted anymore? Is that still anywhere in their sights? Because last time they spoke to us, it was what, that 5-year plan where like, we start, but is that even there anymore? Because if Hamir is what you're banking that on, I think you could give him 50 years. And I don't think he's going to, well, in 50 years, he'll probably be retired. But the point I'm making is, like, you could give him all the time in the world, and I don't think he's going to be the number nine that we need at the moment. It's just, you've sent me into a tailspin saying that this team's going to be...
Well, it is. I mean, but I don't...
You're right. No, you are right. I just never fully thought about it.
Do you think Hamir and Bursal... Well, obviously, Bursal's going to go back, but do you think Hamir will start the season at Sunderland next year?
Yeah.
You do? What about you, yeah, maybe?
I think he might shoot purely on the basis of... It's quite clear that in January, from what Michael Beale said in public... And I know Michael Beale says a lot of things, not all of them factually correct or truthful, but he did say that Mayenda was the one that they were keeping at the club and Hamir was the one they wanted to loan out. They ended up loaning Mayenda out to Hibernian and they ended up keeping Hamir. Now that suggests to me that there was nobody that we could even offload Hamir off to because there wasn't any interest. Because it's like we said before, who was going to come in and take him? So I think out of sheer grim necessity, he will still be at the club in August, but I don't think he'll be starting or laid the line or anything like that because he just simply can't.
I don't think he'll be here. I don't think Ben. I'm not saying to buy him. I'm just saying we'll send him somewhere on loan or whatever. Someone will take. I mean, someone took Bennett and took them, what, 45, 50 minutes of football to work out that he's actually... Mm-hmm. Not very good either. It seems to be a pattern where we bring these players in, we send them out somewhere, and they're like, "Ooh, these aren't very good."
It's like not only have we not recruited for the here and now, it's recruiting for the future, which isn't looking very promising. So we had a situation on Saturday where no one's going to convince me Dan Ballard was fully fit and he would have played if we had like competent players ready to come in defence. Now that would have been annoying, but you could understand it a lot more if we just had that injury thing. But we've recruited since January 2023. We've recruited like two centre halves and both of them's out on loan. And I know the recall window's probably passed, but you couldn't have even had a conversation about bringing either Joe Anderson or Triantis back on loan to cover an injury crisis. So at what point down the line are they going to be good enough to come in? Because Anderson's been at the club since January 2023. He was obviously brought in the squad filler, like a low-risk kind of free signing. He might make it, whatever, right? But Triantis, again, you're bringing these lads in to actively like improve the squad, and they've got to be the nucleus of the squad in a year and 18 months down the road. But how are we going to get to that point if they're not getting first-team football like regularly when they're being sent away? I mean, we had them both playing for Hibs development squad last week, and now people are trying to tell me he's a defensive midfielder, Triantis, now. It's just... The whole thing for a system which is meant to be based on succession planning and logic and joined up thinking, there just doesn't seem to be much evidence of it. And that's why this summer, I think, is absolute make or break for the recruitment structure, not just Speakman, but the entire recruitment department. Because to be quite honest, we've said this on many occasions, I think ever since January 2023, I think Ekwar, you could argue, has been successful. I mean, largely, he looks like a first-team ready player and he's probably played too much. But he does like show something. I think he will improve in the future. And then you've got Bellingham, who's come in and like done really well for a first like breakout season of like playing regularly every week in the Championship. But other than that, they've all been failures. So this summer, we've got to get it right.
Bellingham, it's not like he's been found, is it? Do you know what I mean?
No, I'm not saying.
I'm not saying you're saying otherwise. And he has done well. I do like him. I think, as I said before, I think we'll sell him for a lot of money in the future because the amount of football he's playing at this age, he'll only get better. He's got bags of talent, and that's a good signing. But you know, it's not hard to find Joe Bellingham. It's not like a diamond in the rough, is it? But that doesn't mean that isn't a good sign, and it is. But I think, you know, a lot of the players were brought in generally, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because it's like, well, if they're not good now, it's like, well, they are going to be good in the future based on, I don't know, because you want them to be, that's fine. If that's what you believe and you want to be like, you've got to be positive about it. You've got to, you've got to think, you know, these players are going to come good. How many players of that age, in that volume that we have signed, all become good at the same time? It's not something that happens. It's like, it would be a freakish outcome. You know, if we're saying that Clark's replacement's already in the at the club, I don't know if that is the case. That's what they believe. Who is it, and how good are they going to have to be? How quickly are they going to have to get good enough? I don't know. You know, if we're looking at Mundell, if we're looking at Shane Russon's playing from the left, but if that's the case, then we haven't got the striker that we signed isn't the striker. Yeah, it's just a bit. It's frustrating. It's been frustrating to watch for the last year or so, to watch them take such a great opportunity. Because I always think like it's a funny argument where like when you're not as good, not very good, the assumption is that it's going to be better next season, and all this rubbish that you have to put up with now is actually for the greater good. So it'll be, we might finish 15th this year, but actually it means that's fine because we're going to finish 5th next year. But that's not how football works. It's, and we shouldn't take, I think, I feel as though there's a little bit of a vibe of taking our position for granted in that, well, we got promoted from League One, so that's fine. That's good. That's done now. We've drawn a line under that bit. We've done that League One thing. That's never going to happen again. Well, it could. So you can't. We never thought we'd get relegated to the third tier again, and we did, and we were there for 4 years, and it took us ages to get out of it. And we dragged ourselves out of it. Had an opportunity to get promoted last year, where we didn't take the opportunity off the pitch that we had in terms of the, you know, bringing the right players in at the right time. And then this year, we've got a very, you know, a novice squad, which
but isn't
is like, I would say it's in, I would say lacking in talent as well. I don't think that's too harsh. I think what I'm seeing from the young players, it's like this assumption we're buying these young, talented players who are going to develop well. We bought some young players who are, and some of them don't have the talent that you believe they do. So that's just my opinion.
I think there's two kind of roads that you could go down here. One is, the frustrating thing is, and I've seen a couple of people on my X saying this week, is you look at the team that we played in the playoff final and you'd snap someone's hand off for that team right now, for them to be the ones we were putting out every week. And to be honest with you, if you think about kind of the progression season on season, is anyone saying that the team, and I know injuries and various things like that, but is anyone saying, bar Ahmad, the team that we ended last season with was significantly stronger than that team we got promoted with? I don't know how much stronger it was. And then, I'm not saying it wasn't stronger, but I don't know how much we saw kind of that notable difference. And then you look at this year and we're definitely not in a stronger position. And it makes you wonder if they're going to keep trying to improve the squad with this model by bringing in new and up and coming players and people who, and buying kind of better than you sell to try and kind of promote, well, get the team promoted. When is that going to start happening? Because if we look season on season, it doesn't feel like that's happening. And this isn't based on kind of any sort of ITK or anything. This is literally just wondering. But you do start asking the question, well, do they care about what happens 5-10 years down the line? Are they going to be here 5-10 years down the line? Are they still going to be the owners of this football club? Because it doesn't feel like it at the moment. It doesn't feel like they're investing in it. It doesn't feel like they're ready to kind of put their money where their mouth is. It doesn't feel like this team is getting better season on season, which ultimately is the plan and the model that they sold us all on. But we are not seeing that. Time and time again, we end the transfer window and it honestly feels like we are in the same position or weaker than when that transfer window started. So what's the plan here? Because on a very basic level, it's starting to feel like there just isn't one, and that they're scrambling a bit, and that maybe they're just a bit done with it.
Yeah, I mean,
and I don't know where that's harsh, but it's what it feels like at the moment.
I mean, like, I think there was an improvement between, like, I know you alluded as well, and there was an improvement between the League One promotion side in the last season, because you obviously the likes of Bailey Wright left the club and you brought in the likes of Dan Ballard. But I actually think a lot of our recruitment that summer was smart, because like you said, Gareth, Ellis Sims comes into the club after two really good productive loan spells at Blackpool and at Hearts. And then like you had Dan Ballard, who obviously you'd had a really good loan spell at Millwall, who finished eighth in the league. But then what we've done this season, you get rid of Danny Bart and you bring in Nectar Triantis and Jensen Zield. So it's like, so you're bringing in lads who, like Zield, I think he played like for PSV reserves, and Triantis have been playing in the Australian league. So it's just, as I say, it's just, for me, the joined up thinking and the succession planning just hasn't been evident at all. And you almost wonder, like, just like what went wrong, because I think the blueprint in the season that we came up from League One was actually very, very good, and we made some fantastic signings. I mean, even, and I think this is my big kind of frustration. So you look at last season at some players. So, for example, Joe Gellhart wasn't great. Quite rightly got sick on occasion, but he was kind of on a bit behind and nothing. Joe Gellhart is streets ahead of what we have at the club right now, and he can't get anywhere near the Leeds team. Edouard Michu, again, not the best signing we've ever made, but he was neat and tidy. He could, like, distribute the ball. He kept us ticking over. Like, the goal was scored down West Brom last season. He was instrumental in that, just pulling the strings. Even the kind of more mediocre players like them would now be standout performers in this team. And I think that's what, for me, the worry is, and how we dress it, I'm not quite sure. But I think there needs to be quite a radical overhaul. Otherwise, next season could just be a season-long doldrum.
I think the Michu one's a really interesting one, I think, because I would say of the four that were paraded on the pitch that night against, was it Rotherham?
The teens.
Yeah. He was, obviously, I would say in order of how good they've been, I would put Ahmad, obviously, and then Michu, I would say, based on what I've seen. And it was really interesting that we had an option to buy that player and turned it down after he played 30 games for us. And we decided he wasn't what was required, or for whatever reason, I don't know. It's a bit odd, especially when you see what we have or haven't done since. It seems we downgrade every time. But it's like, well, we downgrade, but in 3 years he's going to be really good. It's like, well, yeah, but we don't know that, and we need to win games now, because it doesn't matter if in 3 years' time if you're in League One again, they're not going to be here if they're any good. So it's just frustrating to see, I think. And you know, I know people probably think, you know, negative, you haven't got a good word to say, blah blah blah. That's fine. If you're enjoying it at the moment, and if you can see some sort of grand vision and how actually this is all going to be great in the future, then fine. That's great. You know, enjoy it. But at the moment, you know, we've gone from probably a position in October, maybe, where there was a lot to be positive about, to now where it feels like the wheels are just not even come off. They're in a different planet. It's just really, really strange, the whole thing. I don't know. It's difficult to pick the bones out of it at times. You're like, well, what is it that we're witnessing? What is that supposed to be doing? Like you said, whatever the plan is or what it's supposed to be, I don't know. It's like you were saying, it just seems to have evaporated. And I can't see the people who are actually administering it being happy either. I mean,
there's no way Christian Speakman's turning up and going,
that was good,
I'm doing a great job at the moment.
Yeah.
I am, like, looks in the mirror every morning and, like, does his words of affirmation. Like, yeah, I am fantastic. Everything I'm doing is great. This is absolutely brilliant. Do you want to clarify that?
I am in alignment.
Yeah, I don't think that the team that got us into the playoffs last year, by the way, is worse than the team we ended League One with. Sorry if it came across, but I am very aware that that is now going to be like on Twitter, like, oh, she on X, sorry. Oh, she doesn't think, no, I don't think it was worse. I just think we're going in the wrong direction.
The team we've got now, the team we put out on Saturday would lose to the team that played in the playoff final.
Oh, absolutely. In League One. Well, yeah, because we'd get at least one shot on target in the play, like with that team in the playoff final.
And it's insane to think that the best player we've got at the club by country mile and who will go for £20 million in the summer was on the bench that day in the League One playoff final.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Well,
it was such a good day. I want to go back to that.
Can I just say, though, as well, just for balance, that everything's actually brilliant. So I just want to say that before we... Because I don't want, obviously, to upset anybody.
Well, you and your agendas, Gareth, you need to really start to sort that out.
Well, you know, people have their own opinions and views. That's fine. Just kind of... It just feels like...
The doldrum.
This happens a lot to
We're
us.
In the doldrums.
Where it's like... We can see it unraveling in front of our eyes, and we pretend it's actually all awesome and great. Maybe that's just social media. I think the match going fan probably is a bit different. I don't know, but it doesn't feel very good at the moment, does it? I mean, I don't know if you spoke to a few people who are just like, you know what, I can't be bothered anymore, and that's really sad. To hear after, like, we tried so hard to get out of League One, for people to be so downbeat and disheartened, and people can say, oh, well, you know, support the club no matter what. People do, you know, you get, you know, 38,000, 40,000 every week, so, you know, people will always go. It's just seeing that those opportunities, I think, dissipate in the name of something that isn't actually a proven hypothesis is frustrating.
My big comparison is when, do you remember when we played Wigan away and we won like 4-1?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because everyone who I was stood with had obviously the good bet on and all were absolutely fuming when the fourth goal went in. And I was potentially like up there with the illest I've been. Like, I was like, I had like a scarf, like I was absolutely dying, and I dragged myself to Wigan to watch us play because I was so behind that team. Now I'm at the end of like a chest infection, just to keep you all updated on my health. But like the Tuesday night game against Leicester, I lived 10-15 minutes from the ground. I wasn't well, and there was absolutely nothing in me that I could do to drag myself out the house to go to that match. And I was probably not as ill as I was that time for Wigan, but I wanted to watch that team at Wigan, and there was nothing compelling me to go. And it is very rare that I'll want to miss a match or I'll feel kind of ill enough to like stop me from going. But there's just nothing. It's the doldrums of Sunderland. That is what it is at the moment.
I think as well it's important to say, because, yeah, there is some people who would argue that, oh, well, yeah, actually, we only came up from League One like less than 2 years ago and we're going to finish mid-table in the Championship. There's not a lot wrong with that. But where we are traditionally as a club, that time under like Terry Butcher and Mick Buxton in the early 90s was always seen as a yardstick for the worst it's ever been, apart from when we got relegated to the third division. Now, this is kind of a reality of the situation we're in right now. So I fail to see how that was once the yardstick for like the absolute worst of Sunderland, and now it's like, oh, it's actually okay. That's the thing I kind of struggle to get behind. I think nobody this season, I think, expected us to compete with Southampton, Leicester and Leeds. And even I think if we'd finished outside the playoffs, again, it's a much tougher league. I think there'd be an acceptance. But I think it's a lack of kind of like drive to get there as soon as possible, and the kind of acceptance after Mowbray left that kind of we would never go into really be in the mix. I think that's what hurts the most. I think as long as I can see the club with like a clear plan to try and get out of this league at the next opportunity in the right direction, I can get behind it. But not when I'm told, oh no, actually I need to accept kind of being in like mid-table, like bottom half of the lower half of the league. You know, like, it's not something I can really like get behind or accept, to be honest.
I think there's a balance like to be had. I think it's more about, for me, it's the opportunity. When the opportunity presents itself, you adapt. But I think there's a lot, I say, take it for granted. Well, if we finish sixth last year, then that means we're going to finish fourth the following year. Then we're going to finish second if we don't go out in the playoff. It's like that kind of... So this year we're going to be finished mid-table. It's fine. But that means, because we're finished mid-table this year, that means next year actually it's going to be better, because that's how it works. Well, that isn't how it works. If you get progressively worse, then you generally get progressively worse.
If you get progressively worse, you get progressively worse.
Yeah, that's generally how it works. Quite literally how it works. And that's what's kind of happening, unless they change and adapt. But I say next year, I don't think it's going to be as easy as some people think it is to be better, because there's going to be a lot of pressure on the group that's been here. You know, you're talking about Abdullah Bar's going to have been here for 2 years. Start of next season. Jefferson Bennett's going to have been here for 2 years. Well, if they're not ready after 2 years, when are they going to be ready? Yeah. You know, it's... And how long are the play? Is it going to take 2 years for Mundell to get good? Is it going to take, you know,
genuine
2 years
question.
For Hjelda to get good?
Do you have a mass exodus in the summer? Do you just...
At no chance.
Cut your losses. No, but like if you were, let's say you're director of football, Gareth, and it's the summer and you're looking at the way we've recruited, do you hold your hands up, say, look, we've made a mistake with some of these players, end their contracts now and just go out and almost do what like Forrest did when they got promoted to the Prem, try and rebuild your squad, buy a load of players and see if that works? Or do you just keep going with the same thing that hasn't worked?
I think you got to look at the opportunities that you've got and say, well, how many of these players do we need to play, but they're not going to play for us? And you send them on loan, and then you go, well, of the remaining core group that we want to keep, what do we need to facilitate their progression in terms of how good they are? Like I say with Barr, if he was surrounded by better players, I think he'd be a better player. Problem is, when he's put in a team with players who are not as good as him or worse, he doesn't pull them up with him. Whereas like say players like Clark Roberts generally do. You know, Stewart did it, Pritchard, drag players up to their standard. You know, I don't expect Barr to be able to do that at this stage. And that's not a criticism of him, it's just he doesn't do it. So he tends to be pulled up by others and looks good in a better team, which is okay, fine. So if that's the case, we've got some players like that, what we need to do is build a better side to ensure that they develop better by playing alongside better players. You know, the idea that we shouldn't sign better players because there's no point, to me, is just like with the Kiefer Moore argument, was just an insane argument, where it's like, well, there's no point signing someone who's good because they won't score goals in our team anyway. What? It's just a bizarre argument. It's
like saying you put Messi in there and like he's not going to score goals.
Don't improve your team because there's no point, because you won't improve. That's what it's kind of like. Well, it doesn't make any sense. That means we should never sign any good players ever again. It's looking that way. And you know, and like worrying about his wages or whatever, it's not your money. Don't worry about it. Why are you bothered? Like, you're spending 500 quid. You're traveling up and down the country to watch, you know, on your season ticket. You travel up and down the country to watch away games, costing you hundreds of pounds a month.
No.
Why are you bothered? Well, you know, I'm glad that we haven't spent money on wages. That has nothing to do with me. And I'm pleased that I've travelled to Southampton to watch Romain Mundell play football.
Yeah, I really enjoy travelling down Mason, to Norwich.
Yeah, to watch Mason Burstall play football. Thank you. I mean, being facetious, and some people probably think I'm being negative, but I don't really give a shit, to be honest. So, if if you enjoy it.
Ooh.
Well, if you enjoy it, if this is your bag, then you know.
Surely, and I'm not criticizing anyone who's this, but surely no one is enjoying this at the moment. Well, apparently we are because we love it when but surely no one's enjoying this. It is the doldrums. I'm really trying to make doldrums happen now.
I'm gonna have to put it in the title of the pod, aren't I? Doldrums. I think we've gone on for about an hour, you know.
We have.
Got to put a break
in. I said we would.
We got there. We didn't need to. That's far too long, really, for people who have switched off by now. But hope you haven't, because on the 28th of March, Thursday, 28th of March, the day before Good Friday, which means you can have booze on a weeknight, we'll be at These Things Happen with Thomas Butler doing a little bit of thing there. So make sure you come down to that. There'll be more details released in the next couple of weeks, over the next sort of few days. We'll get the communications out a bit clearer on the social medias, etc. But please come along. These Things Happen on the 28th and have a drink and get involved in the pod. Has anyone else got anything to add?
Nope.
No.
Lovely. Well, as always, thanks for listening.